your mic on?
Yes.
No, it's not.
Is the green light?
How's that?
Yeah.
Okay. It sounds like it is to me. I'm recovering from a very bad case of the flu, so forgive me if I get into a coughing fit. The 65% solution is kind of the common name for the proposal that we're going to be talking about today. It made the rounds through the legislature and around the country, actually, a couple of years back. And the wording of this one is very similar to what you see traditionally, which would essentially require that 65% of all funds be received by a school district be spent in classroom instruction rather than administration. It makes a distinction about preference of where dollars should be funded, should be spent. It's alluringly simple. It's a wonderful sounding. It sounds right. It sounds good. It sounds feasible, but it's not. To paraphrase H.L. Mencken, there, for every human problem, there's a solution that is plausible, workable, and wrong. And this, we believe, is one example of that. In fact, this proposal provides a solution to a problem that doesn't exist and has the potential for creating problems that don't currently exist. And more important, I think, takes our eye off the ball of where we ought to be focusing in terms of providing the high-quality system of free public schools that our citizens expect, our students deserve, and our Constitution requires. First, let's look at the problem that doesn't exist. I've just handed you two spreadsheets. The top one is information and data for the 2005 fiscal year. It's consistent with previous years, but this is the most recent data available. This is from the National Center for Education Statistics, which is the research and statistical arm of the U.S. Department of Education. And I think what you'll find first is that, as a state, Florida is spending 65% of its funds on classrooms instruction. And you will also note that Florida is well below the national average when you look at the percentages to the right there for costs for administration. So the suggestion that there's something wrong here is not really supported when you look at Florida as a state. But when you turn to the second spreadsheet that I provided to you, this drills down a little bit more into Florida counties and lets us take a closer look at what's going on here. As you move down, now, in order to pair up with what the national figures are, you need to look at the column that is titled total 5XXX plus 6XXX. And that's classroom instruction as defined these days by the National Center for Education Statistics. And as you go down that column, you will note that the vast majority of school districts are, in fact, there or exceed the 65% that's being considered. But you'll also note that there are some exceptions. Let's take Collier County as, I think, one of the first examples you come across. Collier County is an example at 62.9% as opposed to 65%. Collier County as a county spends less than Florida statewide average for administration. Collier County is consistently graded a B for the county and the schools within those counties. So the question that occurs to all of us should be, would shifting more dollars away from administration where they are already performing well and into the classroom cause the students in Collier to perform better? Would it increase student performance? Would we get closer to that high-quality education that we're looking to provide? The answer is it's hard to say. Studies that were done back when this was more in its heyday around 2005 by Standard & Poor's and other respected research outfits were unable to find any link between student performance and classroom expenditure targets like this. So Collier County is functioning well. Its students are performing well. It doesn't meet the mold of 65%, And 65% is unlikely or certainly not proven to provide a solution or an improvement there. Now, can Collier County do better? You bet they can. Of course they could. But the point here is that shifting these dollars is not necessarily the solution to that situation. Let me give you a little bit different example just for comparison. Holmes County is another example if you move further down. They spend more than half again on administration than the statewide average. 50% more on administration. They are also consistently graded a B. You know, what should we be doing to them? Is there, they have room for improvement? But Holmes County has less than 4,000 students. And so in any school structure, you need to have principals, you need to have a superintendent, you need a certain amount of administrative personnel, and you need to be able to attract the kind of personnel that will be helpful and supportive to the education program in Holmes County. So because of the fact that Holmes has such a small enrollment, it tends to magnify the investment in administration in Holmes County. But again, if you shift dollars away from administration and into the classroom, which administrator would you want to eliminate? Would it be the assistant principal at one of the schools whose entire focus job is working with students of low income to keep them in, to keep them in school? Is that program as valuable as putting additional dollars into the classroom? The only point here is that 65% is one of those wonderful one-size-fits-all deals where it winds up that it doesn't fit anybody when you try and apply it with a broad brush and without exception. And so what I'd like to do then is now move on to what some of the real issues are. I mean, if you want to resolve some of the funding issues and some of the priority issues in this state, let's talk about the fact that Florida ranks 32nd in average teacher salary. Let's talk about the fact that we rank 39th in per pupil funding. Now, this is not to suggest that money is always the answer and throw more money at it and then things will improve. But I'll tell you, these are significant indicators about Florida, and if we are to have a high-quality system of free public schools, if we're not in the top 10, we're not doing our job. And so it seems to me that pursuing an initiative such as the 65% solution tends to, the result would be accomplishing little more than putting words in the Constitution. I think we probably would all agree there are enough of those already. Let's instead focus on some solutions that help focus money in the real ways that it needs to be focused and to bring additional resources in the way that they need to be focused. Thank you. I'll be happy to answer any questions. And I know that there are other presenters.
Are there any questions?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll next hear from the Florida Education Association. I have a question, maybe of the sponsor. Do you know how many students we have in the system right now?
I believe the last, it was probably 2.4 million.
4 million? Thank you.
What is that?
I think it's 2.6.
2.6?
2.6 million.
I doubt you'll know, but just in case, do you have any idea how many there were in 2005 when these numbers were published?
Good morning, or good afternoon, actually, at this point. My name is Kevin Watson. I'm going to be filling in for Ron Meyer, our previous advocate and attorney who appeared before your committee last week on this issue. And I know that when Ron appeared before you last week, that he made a lot of important points. I don't know what ground he covered, but I do know that he told you that FEA does not support this proposal, and we have not changed from that position. For all the reasons that Ron stated last week, in addition to the opposition that was stated by Wayne Blanton last week, and even to the concerns raised by Tax Watch, We continue to think this is an unworkable plan. And again, this afternoon, I think you've heard some additional facts and some information from Mrs. Melton that would provide you some additional reasons why this proposal should not receive your favorable vote. And I wanted to add a couple of additional comments without covering too much of the ground that Ruth covered. Again, it is a powerful, powerful argument. On its face, the proposal seems simple, it seems self-proving, and easily understood. If passed, Florida could increase the amount of money spent in the classroom without raising taxes. It could automatically reduce wasteful spending on administration, and it could improve outcomes by focusing on the classroom. Those are very powerful arguments. And all of this would be accomplished by snatching a budget number, 65%, out of the air and holding each school district in Florida to meeting that number. It sounds simple, it sounds almost too good to be true, and as Ruth said, in our estimation it is. We know from studying the proposal over the last 3.5 years and from reading the research of others that the proposal is not workable, even with the helpful definitions that I know Mr. Turbeville, Commissioner Turbeville, has proposed to this. And I'm going to skip straight to that point in the interest of time. I would tell you that I think it's unlikely this idea could be made workable by empowering the legislature with added authority over definitions. I've handed you a copy of the Standards and Poor report that Ruth mentioned. I wanted to give you something independent of us. And here's what the Standard and Poor analysis says. Even expanding the definitions to their broadest potential meaning would still require districts to cut funding to those excluded functions, those that wouldn't be within the definition, including many which are critical to instruction. S&P goes on to note that even accounting for this broader definitional discretion, ultimately, categories of activities that are designed to improve student well-being and that supplement the teaching process, including those things like counseling and library services and health and psychological services, school safety, attendance and truancy programs, would have to be cut. If you didn't cut them, otherwise, the 65% mandate would have no meaning or force of effect. As to the charge or to the assertion about improving student performance, I'm going to try to walk a very delicate line here. And in the interest of time, I'm going to try to abbreviate what Standard & Poor's said here. The findings on the relationship between mandated spending and student outcomes, the analysis concludes that there is no correlation between spending and any minimum percentage on instruction and student achievement. And we need to be very careful here. These findings do not suggest that money doesn't matter and that the districts should not, as a core principle, allocate as much of their resources as possible to teaching and learning. And I will tell you, as the teacher representative, as the support professional representative, we think that's an important core principle. That is the goal. But there are very clear, legitimate reasons why cost outside of teaching and learning might vary, and Ruth gave you an example of some of these. When we consider a state like Florida with 67 districts with almost infinite variation in size, variations in overall district resources and fixed costs, as well as district boundaries that are different that might require increased transportation expenditures, or lower income populations who the district might have to provide both lunch and breakfast services, and the host of other factors that affect spending in this huge business that we're talking about of education, how could one arbitrary number be right? As S&P notes, all of these variables and the criticisms that we've pointed out may point to a more common sense approach of allowing local decision making on allocation of resources rather than locking every district into a minimum spending percentage. We cannot forget that school districts have an obligation both legally and to the electorate to use the funds in a manner most appropriate to their particular communities and the populations they serve. I spoke with Commissioner Turbeville a few days ago, and during that brief conversation, I commented that I would think about not just my organization's staunch opposition to this proposal, but that I'd try to consider some possible alternatives for y'all's consideration. I have to tell you, after the conversation I had with him as I was walking and thinking about this, he may be asking the right question. I think it's important and timely to ask, are we spending our precious school dollars well? That's a great question to be asking. Are our local constitutional officers, our school board members, and our superintendents appropriately and efficiently focusing on the inputs and outputs in our schools? Those are the right questions that I think Commissioner Turbeville is asking us to search out here. And they are the ones that came to my mind as I thought about researching this issue. Just remember that ideally we would demand of our local schools and our school districts that they focus on appropriate outcomes to improve performance, that they would examine the research data, the literature, to determine what practices have been empirically linked to changes in those outcomes, and then reallocate their resources to accomplish those goals. So here's my possible alternative for y'all's consideration today. And let me just digress and say you will not hear me talk about the statistics about how we pay teachers or anything else, just this alternative. We conduct, here's what we ought to do, is that we ought to conduct financial audits and management practice reviews with the goals of determining if the districts are doing, using performance and cost-efficient measures to evaluate all their programs. If the districts use appropriate benchmarks based on comparable districts, government agencies, and industry standards to assess their operations and their performance. Are there potential cost savings in service delivery models? Do they link financial planning and budgeting to district priorities, including student performance, one of the most important things we ought to keep in our mind? Districts could be reviewed in this manner, and we could provide that the Commissioner of Education adopt best practices to be used as standards for these reviews and establish meeting the best practices as a benchmark for every single school district. These reviews can be independent. The audits could be independent. They could be conducted or overseen by APAGA or our Auditor General. We could know whether school district operations are using the best practices to evaluate their own programs, assess their operations, and their performance. They could identify the cost savings and link their financial planning to improving teaching and learning. And the really good part about this alternative suggestion for you today is this. It's that it already exists. Florida has a program called the Sharpening the Pencil Program. It's in Chapter 1008.35, Florida Statute. It was enacted in 2001 by then Commissioner of Education Charlie Crist. And it is intended to accomplish every single thing that we've talked about here, which is looking at improving school district management and use of resources, identifying cost savings, and looking at improved student performance. We simply have not funded this program since the 2003-04 budget year. And here are some of the advantages to this proposal over what we're considering in CP26. This alternative makes school boards smarter because it provides them decision-making data. It accounts for the diversity of districts. It accounts for board member changes due to elections. It's dynamic. It's not static. It's public. It gives the legislature real data to base policy on without having to micromanage every single school district. And it informs parents and taxpayers in a meaningful way. And I think that's the heart of this. By contrast, putting 65% in the Constitution does not make school boards smarter because it doesn't provide them any data. It doesn't improve their decision-making process. It does not account for diversity in the school districts. It is static and not dynamic, and it does not further educate the legislature with specific data to make policy on. In the package that I handed out to you, I gave you a copy of the Standard & Poor's report that I've talked about. I gave you a copy of a guide produced by a researcher who's probably a little more along my line of thinking than perhaps some of yours, but he does talk at length about the 65% solution. And then the other thing I did was I gave you a sample copy of two of these financial audits and the scope and the depth and the breadth of what they cover and the type of money that they can save. Commissioner LaCasa in Dade County, they were talking about $500 million in improved program factors. And it was based on Dade County finding them where they were and what they were doing and not on an arbitrary number. And I think that's a powerful, powerful thing that we ought to think about here. Let me just finish by saying, Commissioner Turbeville, I hope you find these thoughts helpful and sort of in honor of what I told you that I would do, which is to think about something different. And to the committee, I'd close by saying this, that we can be conservative here. We don't need to pass another law. We certainly don't need to amend our Florida Constitution. We simply need to request that the legislature act on the statute they have and fund these audits. Our students, our parents, and our taxpayers, I think, would be a lot better served by this course of action.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the presenter? Okay, thank you. We'll move right along to consideration of CP 0026, Commissioner Turbeville. This had previously been temporarily passed, but why don't you go ahead and present it again, and then we'll get into the amendatory process.
Right, I'll try to give a brief explanation. Throughout our travels throughout the state of Florida, we heard from a lot of taxpayers, a lot of people that were concerned about the high costs of living in Florida, and as part of that was property taxes and just the level of taxation in general. And we've spent a lot of time talking about taxes, It's very important. I voted for Amendment 1 because I thought it was a good first step, and I know we're going to have further debates about tax cuts and about reforms on the taxing side. They're going on currently, Chairman, as you know, upstairs. One of the areas that we haven't spent a lot of time talking about to this point is spending, and the spending side of the equation is just as important as the taxing side. They're inextricably linked, and I believe we owe it to the taxpayers of the state to have some accountability, and part of that accountability is transparency, so that they'll know that any time before them, if there's a tax referendum, if it's a penny tax referendum in their county, if there's a new tax or a new spending program proposed in the state of Florida, they will know at the very beginning that two-thirds of that money will go into the classroom. That's a compelling argument, I believe, that we will ensure for every taxpayer, whatever cent we spend in education, two-thirds of it is going to go directly into the classroom. I think there were a lot of voters on the campaign trail in 2006 who heard from two out of the four gubernatorial candidates who both proposed this 65% measure. And even further, Governor Chris, as a candidate, proposed an even higher threshold, 70% over time. And I believe we'll be seeing that kind of proposal again in the coming months. And again, this goes back to the taxpayer. I know we're focused here on one food group, one subject area in education, but it is the most critical thing that we have as a state to do. Commissioner Roussan had a button on earlier today that failure is not an option. We only have one chance to educate the children of the state. So as I was going through, I certainly believe that the transparency argument is compelling. I also believe that taxpayer accountability is equally important. But I also looked at the performance standards. Over the last 3 years, there's not one A school, not one A school district in the state that has spent less than 70% of their expenditures in the classroom. Not one. That should tell us something. There is a link between spending in the classroom and performance. We all know that it's what happens in the four walls of the teacher. Having a good teacher, being able to maintain and retain those good teachers and have training for them. And I hope that this measure will, in fact, make sure that taxpayers know in any future year there's a floor, and the minimum floor is that at least 65% will be spent in the classroom. And in the last committee hearing, there were concerns that some of the administrative expenditures that are required, that are not discretionary, would be included in this proposal. And I sit here today, and I've heard their concerns from the Education Association as well as the School Board Association. And there's an amendment in the packet today that will allow the legislature to remove transportation and food services from that formula so that we don't penalize any school district because they're rural in nature and they have extra transportation costs, or because they have a lot of students, and by that they would have a lot of food services costs. So I tried to accommodate some of the folks who had criticisms and constructive criticisms into this today, and I hope we'll take up the amendment. I'm willing and pass it today, obviously, and then I'm willing to work with any of the groups in the future. The Florida Education Association was very good, and they were able to come to me on several occasions, express their concerns. And today I hope that I've showed them that I'm willing to learn and move this proposal along. Some of the other groups who are engaged and who find this to be an important proposal, maybe in the wrong way, haven't been quite so forthcoming. But I do know the Education Association, on numerous attempts, they've asked me to modify the proposal, and I'm willing to do that today, and I'm willing to work with them in the future so that if there are other concerns that aren't addressed in this bill, that we can work together to do that. So that's the basic description of the bill and the amendment that's in the packet, Mr. Okay. Chairman.
Thank you. I have one amendment on the desk, Amendment 1 by Commissioner Turbeville. You're recognized to explain the amendment.
again, this proposal allows the legislature to account for differences in administrative expenditures across districts, and it explicitly mentions transportation and food services, which were the two main issues, and I believe two of the main administrative costs that school boards and school districts have to deal with. So this explicitly mentions them, provides intent language for the legislature in the future to address these by not including them in the formula. And again, that is the recommendation of Standard & Poor. We heard a lot about their report, but they did put together a proposal. So this tracks what Standard & Poor's policy arm encouraged, and I believe it's going to track other legislation that's currently pending in the legislature.
Are there questions of the sponsor on the amendment? Is there debate on the amendment? Commissioner Turbeville, having closed on the amendment, all those in favor, do I need a roll call vote or can I do a voice vote? All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment passes. We're now on the proposal as amended. Is there any discussion on the proposal as amended or further questions of the sponsor? I don't have any cards for public testimony. Oh, sorry. Okay. Miss Ashworth?
Wida.
Safe route, didn't you?
Wida.
Wida.
Okay, Wida, thank you.
It's unusual. I'm Wida Ashworth, and I'm representing Florida Tax Watch today. Florida Tax Watch commends you for taking up this issue because they have always believed that more money in the classroom is a good thing. Common sense tells us that dollars spent on direct instruction are more likely to enhance student achievement than those designated for non-instructional purposes. They're definitely supportive of more money going into the classroom. We recommend that the constitutional amendment require that by general law, the Florida legislature establish the threshold for the minimum percentage of educational dollars that must be used for direct instructional purposes. And we offer cautions about the need for integrity in defining what these expenses should include. We emphasize that the dollars must be spent in the areas that are scientifically proven to increase student achievement. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Do you support the proposal?
We do support the proposal, but we would recommend that it be that the Florida legislature set the thresholds and the standards through general law without setting the percentage in the Constitution, in other words.
I see.
That you require that a threshold be set by the Florida legislature in general law.
Okay. Commissioner Miller, do you have a question?
Thank you. So what you're saying is that you basically don't want it in the Constitution. You'd rather that it be statutory.
We support the fact that there could be a threshold set by the legislature of how much that threshold would be and what those standards would be and what they would and would not address and the definitions that would be involved in all of that, in the instructional versus non-instructional.
Let me phrase it differently then. You support the idea of it being in the Constitution, but you don't support the idea of it having the threshold in the Constitution.
Correct. Okay. We would prefer that the Florida legislature set that through general law.
Okay.
Further questions? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Next we have Patrick McConnell. While he sets up his computer, Commissioner Turbeville, I did some quick and rough and dirty math, and if I take these 2005 numbers from the Department of Education that were provided to us in the first presentation, take Florida at $19.042 billion, divide it by 2.5 million students, I could be wrong, but it looks like $68,000 per student. Have you done that calculation or anything like it?
I haven't. I don't know exactly the direction other than of your question, other than just a macro level calculation per pupil, and I know the per pupil number is much lower than that, as it's determined by the state, but not all of that per pupil standard or per pupil funding is federal. Some of it's federal, some of it's state. So I don't know if that includes federal and state dollars or exactly what the numerator is.
Maybe we can get into it before we wrap this bill up.
Is there a technician who can help get this up? I
don't know.
Okay. My name is Pat McConnell. I know I've come to know many of you now. I am an engineer by education. I'm an entrepreneur by vocation. I understand numbers. Currently, I'm a real estate developer. And as a real estate developer, I don't have a lot to do these days because I've got what used to be $11 million worth of property that's now worth. So I have time to do research. And I do research. And one thing that has always concerned me has been education. And so I've done a lot of research and I've done a lot of preparation. I've shared a lot of that with you. I want to thank Commissioner Turbeville for this bold amendment. It strikes right to the heart of the spending of the drunken sailor. And if you would, since we don't seem to have we're not linked up. If you would turn to page 2. I'm sorry, page 2 in this right here. Okay, page 2, I'd like to talk about statistics in K-12. Class size as it relates to Florida. I'd like to talk about global performance, Florida and the U.S., and I'd like to talk about the cost, Florida and the U.S. Let's go to the next page. Class size amendment. Class size amendment says that we are going to have maximum numbers in classrooms. This is on page 3. Now, as of June the 30th, there is one existing classroom for every 17.7 students. Now, you say, well, where did you get that? If you will look at the back at the page that I opened up and I left you, which has the, yes, right there. That page, and I don't have a copy of that myself. Do we have any of those left?
Page 19 in the other book.
Yes. The sources for this information is given on the next page. These are all public sources. If anybody wants to go and check my numbers, they certainly can do it. This is where I got the numbers. And what it says is we have one existing classroom for every 17.7 students in the state. We have one existing teacher for every 14.6 students. Now, that includes your special ed teachers as well. So there is a disconnect between the class size amendment and all of the construction that's going on all over the state, spending billions of dollars. Now, let me say this. Technology has changed a lot of things, and I believe that the class size amendment today needs to be revisited, because I think we can do a lot of things with technology that we couldn't do when the class size amendment was passed. And I think that we ought to take a look at all those things. So let's look. So we have a disconnect there. Flip to the next page. Let's talk about global performance. Our children are not going to be competing in just an economy in Florida or the U.S., they're going to be competing internationally. Now, there are organizations that check, that compare, and one of them is this Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, and they have a program that's abbreviated PISA, and they did testing around the world. If you are familiar with John Stossel referred to this report. And if you want to look at the next page, what you'll see is that I had to create, this is page 5, I had to create an index for a comparison of how we do as compared to other countries. So I took the math score, the science score, and the reading score, I added them up. This report also happens to have spending per student in equivalent U.S. dollars using purchasing power parity. The results are revealing. Flip to page 6. What you see on page 6 is the U.S. and its performance relative to these other 25 countries. We came out 21st out of 26. Now, if you flip the next page, what you find is this takes the spending per student in U.S. equivalent dollars in purchasing power parity. And what you can see is that we outspend everybody. Flip the next page. Now on page 8. And what we get for that spending is we get an inferior product. And if you notice, everything to the right, those countries did worse to us, worse than we did academically, and those to the left did better. But look at the variance in the amount of dollars they spend purchasing power parity. Now flip the next page. We spend more than any other country except Switzerland and Austria. We spend 5 times what the Slavic Republic does, and they get better results. Well, we can feel good because we exceeded Spain, Portugal, Italy, Mexico, Greece, and Mexico. Flip to the next page. I agree that there is little. You cannot come to any conclusion which would support that spending for the sake of spending results in any academic results in the classroom. Let's go to page 11. Education is the biggest part. This was the 02 to 08 budget. Education was the largest component. It was 34% of the budget. K-12 was 57% of that, or 19.4 of the entire budget was spent on K through 12. And the largest part of it, of course, is funded through the local required effort and local assessments. It consumes, on a local basis, half in round numbers of the dollars spent in the county in property taxes. And it is crushing our taxpayer. So let's look at page 12, and let's look at the cost to educate each student. Now, the way that the public school system defines that is they have this system of funds, and they have the general fund, they have the special revenue fund, the debt service, yada, yada, yada. They have all these different funds. But when they look at spending per student, they just look at the general fund. So, and by the way, my county is not real good on putting stuff up on their website. So the latest number that I had is a year before, but it's close enough for government work. I mean, that's what this is. It said that they spent about $6,900. This is on page 12. This is 1, 2, 3, 4 lines up. It says that they say the cost per student, what they spent, was about $6,900. That's only part of the cost. Flip to the next page. Now, the appropriate calculation for what's spent is to take the total dollars that we spend, all of them, and divide it by the number of students. Listen, that's the way anybody who who operates a business, anybody, you can't just selectively say, well, I'm going to take this and I'm going to take that, but I'm not going to count this over here. It's total cost. And if you take total cost, you'll find the numbers do something a little different. Let's flip over to page 14. The budget for Manatee County was, let's call it $890,000. We had 42,000 students. We spent $21,000 for every student in our system. Now, I'd like you to get your brain around $21,000. That's an incredible number. Now, if we went back to a previous slide, in 03, we said that the U.S., remember that where we showed spending, showed that the U.S. was spending about $8,900 in 03. Let's flip to the next page, and let's give the school system a break, because they're building a lot of schools. So let's do a little math. Let's back out the expenditure for schools. So if we had a budget of $890 million, we take out $379 million for schools. That leaves us with $512 million spent for 42,000 students, which is $12,000. Now remember, the school system said a year before they spent $6,900 per kid. So they're saying that they're spending about 57% of what they're really spending. Let's flip to the next page.
Mr. McConnell, before you go on, I wanted to give you plenty of time because you put a lot of time into this, but let's go another 5 minutes if you can wrap it up in 5 minutes.
I will. Okay. Let's do us a little analysis. Basically, we're going to decide that the teacher is the production unit. That's where everything's happening, is happening in the classroom. Everything else is overhead. So let's see how we're spending our funds. Let's go over to page 19. 19, we said, let's figure that out. Let's take the number of kids in the classroom based on class size amendment, and let's flip to page 20, and at the top, we'll find that we're going to spend the $12,000 times 18 students in the elementary, times 22 in the middle, times 25 in the senior, and we find that we're spending between $220,000 and $300,000 in those that's assigned for 20 students. Now, let's figure out what we pay the teacher. We pay the teacher $44,000, put 25% in overhead, benefits, that puts us at $55,000, which is 18 to 25% of what we're spending in is going to the classroom. The rest is overhead. Now, if you flip to the next page, this is what it looks like. Our triangle, our pyramid, is upside down. Now, okay, let's talk about capital spending. Go to page 22. From 00 to 08, we spent about $2 billion in Manatee County. That's about $47,000 for every child. You put 20 of them in a classroom, that is $950,000. Some friends of mine are entrepreneurs. They built some classrooms for school system. It was $125,000. That leaves $825,000 for books and buses. And where does the money go? The education system has morphed. Page 23. It's morphed from its original mission, and it's doing all sorts of things. If you flip to the next page, in 1885, our Constitution had public schools. They were all local, and on the left, you see what it looked like, and on the right is what it has become today. If you flip to page 25, if you saw Star Wars, you remember Jabba the Hutt. Well, I found a picture of Jabba the day he was born on the left. And on the picture on the right is what he looks like today. and he's growing, and that's what our government is doing. What do? We need to refocus. We need to refocus. We need to remember what we're doing. We are educating our future, our children. We need to refocus in the classroom. Do not gut this amendment. Pass it like it was originally presented. It will force reform. It will force a better product, our educated children. It will give the teachers a living wage. We don't have any men in the classroom because you can't afford. We need to give the teachers a living wage, and it'll result in a lower cost to the taxpayer. What we need to do is we need to have a task force to reinvent the education system, and then we need to work on the rest of government. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you, Mr. McConnell. Members, that was it for public testimony. I think we should go right into debate. Does anyone have anything they would like to say about the proposal? Seeing none, Commissioner Turbeville, do you want to close?
Sure. I just want to make one or two final statements. I appreciate Mr. McConnell coming today and putting so much time into his presentation. He's here as a public citizen, much like the public citizens we saw around the state when we went to travel to them. I think it's pretty clear that most taxpayers want accountability, especially in this area, the education system, where it's our most important expenditure. As I mentioned before, failure is not an option, to borrow fellow commissioner's slogan, because that's the truth. We only have one chance to educate kids as they're going through our system. And so while I think we can work together going forward and reshape this and mold it through the committee process, we have adopted some of the amendment that addressed some of the concerns of the Education Association, and I appreciate their approach discussing the Sharpening the Pencil Act. It did pass in 2001, and every school district is supposed to be evaluated once every 4 years. I think the taxpayers probably deserve a little bit more accountability than that, and I think we should look at expenditures every year rather than just once every 4 years. So I hope that you'll support this. Again, I'm willing to work with any of the groups who want to shape this proposal, and I ask for your favorable support.
Commissioner Turbeville, having closed on the proposal, Secretary will please call the roll on CP 26.
Commissioner Bostic?
Yes.
Commissioner Hogan?
Yes.
Commissioner McKee?
Yes.
Commissioner Les Miller?
No.
Commissioner Moore?
No.
Commissioner Riley?
Yes.
Commissioner Roussan?
Yes.
Commissioner Turbeville?
Yes.
Chair LaCassa?
Yes. By your vote, the bill passes. Next, we'll move to SR 19 by Commissioner Dal Roussan. And members, again, I'm probably going to cut out in 5 minutes and turn the chair over to Commissioner Hogan so I can go watch the fireworks at F&T. And start. Commissioner Roussan.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, commissioners. I have proposed SR 0019. As a statutory recommendation. I think that many of you are familiar with it. It has been through previous committee and passed, but what I seek to do is first expand what already exists at three particular institutions, Wakulla, Lahtie, and in Hillsborough. I'm seeking to push the legislature to provide more faith and character-based beds in these institutions, evaluate the cost savings and the fact that it could reduce recidivism and as well as enhance professionalism amongst the employees of Department of Corrections. These programs work, and when we're looking to reducing the number of inmates, and right now it's estimated that 32% of all released inmates returned to incarceration within 3 years. If we can affect that measurably, and the statistics and the data indicate that we can, then we should do everything within our power to enhance that. And so it's fairly simple. One, we want to expand what already exists. Secondly, direct the legislature to evaluate these programs for their cost savings, crime reduction, and enhancement of the professional officers that work in the system. This also effectively will prepare inmates for reentry. And I think that it's something that I would like to see this committee vote favorably so that I can get to the full TVRC.
Questions of the sponsor?
Commissioner Roussan, is this part of the package that Commissioner McDonough, former Commissioner McDonough, proposed to us?
Yes.
Okay.
Further questions of the sponsor? I don't have any amendments with respect to the proposal. Is there any public testimony? I don't have any cards. No? Is there debate? Commissioner Turbeville.
I just want to say I think it's a very good program. It's shown proven results over the last decade, and I appreciate having the opportunity to vote in favor of the proposal.
Commissioner Hogan.
I'd like to echo Commissioner Turbeville's comments. These are excellent groups, and if we're truly wanting prison to be a process of rehabilitation, then we have to offer them something other than simply an education. A character is typically the flaw that has caused their problem to begin with. And so I applaud you for presenting this, Darrell. Thank you.
Further questions or comments? Commissioner Roussan, do you want to close on the proposal?
No, stand on the comments.
Commissioner Roussan, having closed, Secretary will please call the roll on SR 19.
Commissioner Bostic?
Yes.
Commissioner Hogan?
Yes.
Commissioner McKee?
Yes.
Commissioner Les Miller?
Yes.
Commissioner Moore?
Yes.
Commissioner Riley? Yes. Commissioner Roussan?
Yes.
Commissioner Turbeville?
Yes.
Chair LaCasa?
Yes. By your vote, show the measure passes. Congratulations. Members, that's it. We have one other item. I'm sorry. We have one other item, discussion of future meetings. Is there anything that anybody would like to contribute for the good of the order? Hearing nothing, Commissioner Moore moves we rise.